The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we get to sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and related music industry experts. If you love playing guitar, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber and from Everyone Loves Guitar, and I have a couple of interesting things. One is I have a cat fixing to jump on me, but the other reason more interesting is watch out, Tiger. I'm with Darren Favorite, who's a very interesting, cool guy. A lot of experience, a lot of history in the music business, and we have him live from the throne in Nashville. Darren grew up in the Grand Ole Opry. As a matter of fact, his music is legendary in his lineage. His grandparents were Grand Ole Opry stars, and his dad was an accomplished songwriter and publisher who wrote or co-wrote over 20 top 40 hits for people like Bob Wills, Gene Watson, Johnny Cash, and Ella Fitzgerald, just to name a few. Darren started playing guitar professionally at 15 years old, and he was mentored in Los Angeles by the late R.A. Bumps Blackwell, who played vibes for Billie Holiday and was instrumental in honing the talents of Quincy Jones, Ray Charles, and Herb Alpert. Studying with Bumps gave Darren the tools and knowledge to work professionally at a very young age. And although jazz music is his passion, to earn his keep, Darren's played for Bob Dylan, Little Richard, Tommy Two Tone, Engelbert Humperdinck, Shania Twain, Patti Lovelace, Pam Tillis, Colin Ray, James Otoa, and most recently with Tracy Lawrence. That's not a bad way to earn your keep, playing with those people. You poor thing. Oh. You love jazz, and you had to earn your keep playing for Bob Dylan. Oh, I feel for you. Darren also does session work, produces independent label projects, and he's currently in the process of recording a pop jazz project featuring Heidi Baskall, who's a vocalist. Darren, thank you for coming on the show, man. I appreciate it. We've been trying to coordinate this for a while.
Yeah. It's an honor, man. I've heard a lot about you from my years.
Shh, don't say anything. Actually, I was on a call yesterday, and it was kind of nice. Do you know Michael Spriggs?
Absolutely. Very well.
Yeah, I figured you'd know. And he said to me, it was really weird, like, I'm not really good with compliments, to be honest with you. And he said, you know what? My peers think so much of you. And I was like, really? And I was just like, you know, it's nice to hear and everything. I'm just awkward taking compliments. But I guess I've interviewed a lot of guys up there, and everybody has a good time. So I'm happy, you know.
So you're on to something, Craig. You're on to something.
All right. I'm on to something because I got Darren Favorite on this show. So let's dig into this.
Let's dig in, baby.
Let's start with Bumps Blackwell. So I did a quick, you know, Wikipedia lookup, and it said that he produced You Send Me by Sam Cooke, which is, you know, like, iconic and very famous song, and a bunch of other iconic singles by guys like Little Richards. And it seems, just, you know, I get the feeling from your bio that he was pretty influential in your life. And so I was wondering if you could talk about maybe how you met him and what were you doing out in L.A.?
Oh yeah, I can definitely score you on the whole scene of how that happened. My grandfather, step grandfather actually, was Hank Snow, who was a Grand Ole Opry star. Now that's not my Radio Dot and Smokey were my maternal grandparents, who were Opry stars as well, who were mentioned in my bio. So I grew up in church. My stepdad was a preacher, so I started playing guitar when I was about 13, maybe. I was a drummer, and I wouldn't play drums in front of anybody, even though I was fairly good, I guess, for a kid 12, 13, 11, 12 years old, but I didn't feel confident on it. So I started noodling around on a guitar and got fairly good at that fairly quick, and I started playing in church. So Little Richard had come to the church to preach back in the religious days.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
All right, so he came to the church accompanied by Bumps Blackwell, who was at the time legally blind. He couldn't see anybody. So
Very cool, man.
My mom has told me this story. I mean, because I wasn't a party to it. I just got the, you know, mom said, you want to go to L.A. and live with bums? I'm like, sure, why not?
So how did that come about, though? I mean,
he heard me playing in church and asked who the guitar player was. And my mom said that was my son. And he said, I'd like to mentor him. He shows a lot of his playing and groove and soul is really good. Plus, he can work with Richard, and I can put him on some sessions and do some live gigs in L.A. That was in 1980, 81.
Holy. And you were, how old were you then?
I was 15.
Wow. You know, it just shows you how times are different. Like today someone says, hey, how about you send your son, some guy comes to a mom and says, hey, how about you send your son, your 15-year-old son out to live with me in L.A.? That'd be a totally different connotation to be like, you know, on the phone with the cops, you know? No, seriously, man.
Right? I know.
You know, the world's a different place, man, you know? Wow. That's really cool. So she said, yeah, and you just went out there.
I did. I went out and I arrived at the airport, and Greg Moore, who played with Louis Prima, Jay Graydon, and one other person, snagged me from the airport and took me to Bumps' house. And it was beautiful. It was off of Elsinore Drive in North Hollywood, or Eleanor Drive, Lancashire in Eleanor. It was not a great part of town, but it was great. Because, I mean, literally, from the time my feet hit the ground to the time my wheels up coming back, I was playing. I was playing with Bob. I was playing with Richard. I was playing with the Shandells. I was playing with Zigzag Man. I did a live radio show, you know, out there in Sunset City. I mean, it was unbelievable experience. Plus, he was teaching me, he was mentoring me in a business sense, too, about, you know, how to create a brand. Because I was always asked, how did Jay or Larry or Lee Ritenour or any of these guys, how'd they get into the session world, man? It's just like, that is like an uncrackable nut. And Bumps looked at me with the no seeing eyeballs that he had and said, you don't, you create your own click. And that has stuck with me for 40-something years, you know, for 35 years. I'm 50. So.
Yeah, I'm just doing the math. You look pretty good for 50, man. I thought you were like 10 years younger than me because I'm only like 4 years older than you. I've had more
work. I'm 52, actually.
52? I'm 2 years older than you, man. That's it. Do you have any kids?
Yeah. I got four.
Four?
Four kids are all grown.
Holy,
I got two grandbabies. Oh, yeah.
Wow, because thinking maybe you must have no kids. That's why you look so much younger. That's awesome, man, because I got three, and I'm thinking, well, everybody, if I see someone who looks young, I'm like, you don't have kids, right? And like, you know, I don't have myself. Okay, I get it. Because you know the deal with kids, they don't make you younger, man. They get you older. Okay, so... So when this happened, though, like, did you go to school out there or no? You were out of school at that point.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I quit school when I was in the ninth grade. And growing up evangelical preacher kid with my mother and all the entertainment in my family, they knew what I was going to do. I talked to my mother. I'm so good at selling stuff. I talked my mother into letting this happen. I mean, okay. She tells me that. I don't remember the actual process of selling this to her. Like, hey, I need to get out of school. I need to go do this. This is something I've always dreamed of. And he said he was going to homeschool me out there anyway. But that never happened. And from that time, I left school pretty much. I've gone back since and got my GED. And you know, my wife works at Blair School of Music for Vanderbilt. So I do some teaching stuff. Advanced guitar teaching stuff, but I went for it. I jumped in with both feet, man. I said, this is it, this is what I'm doing.
So that's what I was going to get to next. You must have been seriously like passionate at that age to be willing to do that.
Yeah, there was no other path for me. As soon as I started seeing that, and it wasn't about the girls really, like a lot of people say, oh, I play guitar because of the girls. I played the guitar because when I learned something on the instrument and could play it and do it well and do it better than other people, it gave me the best high in the world. I loved it. It made me feel complete.
Does it still make you feel like that?
Yes. Yes, it does, Craig.
Yeah, that's great, man. So, okay, so you learned from him, in a sense, the business end. And you also learned, I'm assuming he taught you a lot about performing and performance.
Yes. And theory. I mean, he was an educator. He educated. His background was with the National Guard Reserve in Seattle. So he was was the band director, the big band, and the pop band. And it's funny how really you think I'm sitting here doing this interview with you is really making me cast back some, you know, look my cast my glaze my gaze back to those days, and it's like it's unbelievable how what I'm implementing of what he taught me.
That much of an influence.
Oh, such a genius, such a beautiful human being too. I mean, I think he was Buddhist, but just a beautiful love of life, kind to everyone from the bottom to the top, usually in that order. I've taken a lot away from him.
Well, even
carried it through my life.
Even being a Buddhist, even though 81 is not, you know, in pop culture, it's not like the 50s, but even being an active Buddhist back then wasn't like, conventional. It wasn't like a norm, like you wouldn't hear a lot of people saying that.
No.
Yeah.
And he also was into homeopathic cures like acupuncture and herb supplements and all that stuff way before the curve. I mean, he was a genius dude, man. Yeah. I mean, that's all I know to say about him. Look at that.
That's awesome. What is all? Oh, there you go, man. There's the Bogner amp. you need some pedals. Your pedal board isn't big enough.
Yeah.
I was just kidding. He's got about 15 pedals on his pedal board. What would, like, if you had to summarize, you know, top two or three, what were the most important takeaways or lessons that you got from being around him?
Okay. There's about three or four that really come to mind. And the first one I've already told you is like, if you want to be successful and you have a gift and you're good at it, then you don't have to wait for someone to call you. You have to create your own path. And that is what I've done playing for other artists. But now at my age right now, since I've retired from the road about 2.5 months ago, I'm really getting to carve it out, and it's paying dividends like I could have never imagined. So I'm actually just now starting to fulfill that thing that he told me to do those many years ago. I'm actually implementing hardcore right now, which that's create your own clique. Second thing is treat everyone with the utmost respect unless they have shown you not worthy. Two, three, my work ethic has got to always be good. I always give more than you're asked. Mm-hmm. You know, if somebody asks you for, hey man, can you do this guitar track? Give them more than they ask for. Give them the love. If it needs an acoustic or a mando or something, put it on there. Give it to them. Show love in all things. And don't sweat the small stuff. It's all small stuff. That's a book. I know everybody knows that statement, but you know, he just said, don't stress about anything because it's not worth it. It won't change the outcome.
I think that is such a valuable lesson because I can't tell you. A question that I often ask is if you could go back and give the younger you some advice, what would you say? And probably a third of the time, it's don't worry about the little things. So that advice is so, you know, to have that ahead of time and to have known that and to, to really have believed it, you know, that's 30% of the people out there, you know, didn't have that. You know, and
I know it's heartbreaking to see that. You know, when I see some of my peers that are, you know, 15 years my junior, you know, worrying about these things that just aren't worth, even the big stuff. Just seeing these young guys just really stressing out over things, and but I think the social pressures are real heavy on cats today about image, all that stuff really plays heavy into it, which is. You have to kind of be in to know that. But I always tell my young student guys in their 30s and their 20s and 30s, I was like, dude, don't worry about anything. Just fix it.
Yeah, yeah.
This thing is your choice. We're all making choices every day about how we want to eat, how we want to look, how we want to perceive life, or how we want to tackle that song we're trying to write, which I just, by the way, just got to write a song with Scott Stapp Monday. It was unbelievable.
From Creed?
Yeah,
that's cool, man. That's really cool.
I know he's going through some shit, but he's awesome. Anyway, so yeah, those are the things. I wouldn't tell my younger self much other than, you know what I would tell? Don't ever quit, start smoking. If I could go back and tell my younger self one thing, that would be it.
You smoke now or you quit?
No, I quit 3 years ago, but I would have never quit
up. Yeah, that's a tough habit. So talk about your dad for a minute. He wrote over 20 top 40 hits for some pretty amazing people. Can you maybe share a story or two about your dad?
Oh, absolutely.
What was his name?
My dad, my biological dad. Okay, my mother was married 3 times. So, I mean, that's no big deal. I mean, we're in the South here, guys. Marriage is just a kind of formal dating. Right? Not to me anymore. I found my love of my life, but, you know, I've been with her almost 20 years. Anyway, my dad. my dad came from Michigan.
What was your dad's name?
Larry Lee. Larry Lee. Favorite.
Is he still around?
No, he passed away in 2001.
Sorry about that, man.
Yeah, he lived a rough life. He hung out with, now, you want to talk about somebody that hung out with some cat daddies. I mean, the reason I have a decent career, and it started in when I came back to country music and started playing, is because his relationships with people. I mean, he knew Kris Kristofferson real well. Willie, he worked for Cash for almost 15 years. Johnny Cash, at the House of Cash. Amazing stuff. He wrote for Screen Gems Publishing. Excuse me. And then he went on to Cedarwood, and he wrote for a bunch of publishing companies. Some of the songs he wrote were like Texas Proud, What's Fort Worth for Bob Wills, 14 Karat Mine for Gene Watson, Statler Brothers, Do You Remember These, Class of 57. Got the Ella Fitzgerald record here, and I can't remember the title on the record, but it's in vinyl. It was awesome. It was her country-ish record that she did later in her career. He had a ton of success, and then he went and opened his own company doing song plugging for other writers. So he'd pitch their songs to artists.
So he became a publisher.
Pretty much. And that's what he did up until his death. But he was a guitar player, you know, he was a chunk rhythm player, like a Texas rhythm, Western swing cat, you know, knew all the passing chords real good. And, was a decent singer, and you know, that's what he was. He was a troubled soul. I wish I could have gone to his younger self and told him some things that I learned from Bumps.
Yeah. What was his deal? What was his demons?
His demons were alcohol and pills and cigarettes and more.
Man, so in reality, you probably benefited going out to Bumps in more than a bunch of ways, because to grow up in that environment is tough, man.
Yes.
It is not, you know, you wind up carrying a lot of burdens for other people that you don't deserve. So, you know, it's unfortunate that he had to deal with that, but you were probably served in multiple ways by having an opportunity to go at Bumps. And I bet your mom knew that. Now that I'm hearing all, I bet your mom knew that, and that's why she was so encouraging of it.
Yeah.
In hindsight.
She loves that decision. That's one of the best decisions she said she ever made in her life, was sending me out there. And I agree with her.
Yeah.
It absolutely shaped my young mind at that time, even though I went through my own phase of partying and doing all kinds of crazy shit, that I at least had a goal. I had a real mentored goal in my head of what real success is all about, not the Motley Crue success. And I'm not coining them in but you understand exactly.
Yeah,
what
no, saying. I totally get it, man. 100%.
I think listeners will get it too.
Oh, I mean, totally. Yeah, for sure, man. Because everybody goes through their stage of doing something, but it's one thing if you're going through that stage and you got an environment around you promoting positive stuff, success, alternative medicine, and Buddhist thinking. And another, if you're going through that stage and you have a totally different environment, you know, the fork in the road is pretty big where you could go. And it sounds like you didn't have that end of the fork open for you because you didn't have that situation. So I'm happy for you, man.
Thank you, Craig.
You've played with like a lot of iconic artists. If you could tell me maybe how you got the gig and what was the most important takeaway or lesson that you learned from some of them. So let's start with Bob Dylan.
Yeah, well, Bob was a product of Bumps. Of course, everything, most of the icon, well, Engelbert wasn't, but Bob and Richard and, you know, anything that's listed, which there's a lot that's not listed in my bio. My wife wrote that bio for me like 6 years ago, and it's the only one I had that was current, so I tried to a little bit. So anyway.
It's all good, man.
Like I said, when I landed, I mean, I got, you know, Jay Graydon, who's one of the greatest guitar players ever to walk the planet, played that Peg solo like nobody's business. Everybody thinks it's Larry Carlton, but it's not. It's Jay.
Oh, really? And, on Asia?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, go check it out. It's unbelievable. I mean, if you haven't listened to it in a long time, go listen to it and then research who played it and how they got that solo. It's pretty interesting. So I was put into a lot of situations. That's why he was so good for me, because it's like, okay, I didn't know how to read, but I had a really, really fast ear. So, I mean, literally he took me to one session, at LA Sound or at Capitol. It's where I met Al Schmidt, who, you know, is an iconic engineer who I still stay in touch with to this day. So he'd throw me into these situations. Well, one of those situations happened to be with Bob Dylan. I was so into like Al Di Meola, Alan Holdsworth, Lee Ritenour, Phil Keaggy even at that time. I was so into all those guys. I didn't really know or care who Bob Dylan was. No, I really did.
I totally get that. I get it, because I was never really like a Dylan guy. And I could listen to old Dylan, but I'm not.
Serve somebody.
And yeah, he's got great songs, but it's not like I'm going to put that Steely Dan. I'm going to wear the grooves out of Steely Dan 100 times before I'm going to put Bob Dylan on, to be honest with you.
Oh,
so, yeah. So I totally get that. You know, you respect him, but it's just not, if it's not your thing, it's not your thing.
Yeah. And it's definitely, but I adapted to it. And we did like, I forget what it was. It was like it wasn't a record. It wasn't something like that. It was something like a recorded rehearsal, or it could have even been an audition for all I know. But we did it for over a couple of days. So I actually got to play with him in a controlled setting for like 3 days. And I think Bumps' daughter out there, I can't remember her name right now. But I can get some of this finite information for you if you want to know. I think it's Rebecca Blackwell. Anyway, she's got some of those old reels. I mean, and I'm trying to get some of that stuff so I can have it in my coffers. I don't want to do anything with it. I just want to listen to it.
Sure.
But that was the Dylan experience. And he was going through that religious phase, too, because so him and Richard were kind of palling out, you know. So it was kind of like, you know, and then he liked my playing and like, hey man, you want to come play this church? And so we played a church in Escondido, something like that in Southern Cal. So it's just real sparse kind of things. And then, you know, the Richard stuff was more a little bit of a regularity during the gospel thing. Cause he's like, damn, we need him to play guitar for Richard. So I was doing a bunch of Richard stuff. Which, you know, I love Little Richard, and I don't know how. I haven't kept up with him, obviously, because I just didn't. I was a stupid kid. I should have kept up with all of that, but I didn't. And then after about a year of being out there doing all that massively crazy stuff, which I tried wine for the first time out there.
That's what you do. It doesn't matter. You would have tried it at home. It doesn't matter where you are. That's the age, you know.
As a matter of fact, here's a funny story from that era. Okay, so I had one of those days where I had to be in the studio at like 9:30 or 10 in the morning the next morning. I knew this. They left me at the house with one of the Shirelles. The lady, one of them, I don't remember her name, Miss Mary or something. She passed out on the damn chair in the living room. They had like 3 gallons of wine in the fridge. I literally, in about an hour and a half, drank a whole gallon of wine.
Wow.
I was so fucked up.
Yeah.
I was throwing up. They were laughing their asses off at me. They put me in bed and then woke me up the next day. It was the worst feeling I've ever felt to this day as far as a headache and hungover. It was unbelievable. They're like, tough shit, little white boy. You got to get, because it was all black dudes.
Yeah.
It was all black dudes. I was the only cracker in the bunch. And they said, get your little white cracker ass up. You got to be in the studio in about 30 minutes.
So you made it?
I did. Yeah. I did make it. And that was a lesson. I think they probably did that on purpose. Let's see if this boy can hang, you know?
Yeah.
And I hung, man. You know, I mean, it was a rough day. I remember the roughness of it. I don't remember what I played. I think it was a Zigzag. There was a guy called the Zigzag Man out there, Rolling Papers.
Yeah.
And he did a radio show. And he had a band. And they tossed me into that situation. I mean, I was playing, you know, two or three nights a week doing that shit. And I think it was his record we were cutting. So that was the Zigzag Man. I mean, he had the curly Q mustache, the dang Peter Pan hat and all that shit going on or whatever. It was crazy. Oh, you're making me think about some funny shit, Craig. I'm telling you, I hadn't thought about this stuff really in years.
Good, man.
I mean,
clean out the cobwebs.
Yeah.
Engelbert. Now that's like an odd man out.
That was an odd man. Now that was a kind of a pickup thing too. I was in Vegas playing for probably Tracy back in the 90s, and Engelbert was doing Good Morning America and some other TV shit. So they didn't have anybody. So I was the guy they called for that, and I went and played a couple television spots with him, and that was my extent with Engelbert.
So you were on one of his specials or something like that?
One of the interviews, you know, like a Good Morning America from Vegas or one of those kind of things. It was definitely for a network.
Gotcha.
TV money. I like TV money.
Why is that? Like,
it's, well, back in the day, like when it was, I think TV money's still pretty good on the networks. You get paid as a leader, you get double pay. TV pay is the scale. The union scale was about $6.52 for an hour or a 90-minute show, like a morning show. That's a 90-minute morning news show. It's a good paying show. A late night show like Letterman or Leno, which I've done Leno a couple of times. They pay really good. They're 90-minute, you know. So 2 hour. Any Saturday Night Live pays really good. Anything like that pays that $6.52 or did. It's more now. And I was leader on most of the times I played. I was the MD for the, like, Pam Tillis when she did Leno, Tracy Lawrence when he did Leno. I was MD, so I got like $1,300 just to go and hang out with Harrison Ford and, you know, in the green room. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
just
play a
couple. Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, I love it.
That's good.
That's what I'll miss about my touring. But I've done it. I'm good.
So you
come hang out with Craig.
Come to hang out with me.
Yeah, buddy.
I won't be as entertaining as what do you call it, man? Unfortunately, Little Richard, that's for sure.
No, he's flamboyant. And I'll tell you what, I learned a lot about stage presence from that motherfucker. Excuse my language.
I would imagine.
I'm pretty flamboyant when I dress for stage. I mean, I try to be. As I'm older, you know, I've gone through a period of gaining weight. Right now, I'm at a good fighting weight that I can wear all my cool clothes.
Yeah.
So I'll put on some skull pants. I don't have any tattoos or anything, so I don't have that to go with anything. But
that's rare, isn't it? I don't have tattoos either, but like when I go to the gym, I'm literally maybe the only human being that doesn't have tattoos.
Yeah, and I'm going to keep it that way just because of it. I was thinking. Get a sleeve on my arms because I got sun damage.
Right.
You know what? Fuck it. Fuck it.
Yeah, man. We're starting a new trend.
That's right. Don't mark your body up.
That's right. No, it's really weird. I just have never had an interest in it. I don't know why. My kids got them, but I'm not. It's not my thing.
Yeah, my kids too. I mean, they all up into that shit.
Yeah.
Only ink I want's on contracts.
But <Ba-dum-bump.
laughs> you got it, buddy.
Hey, so talk about what you're working on now that you're excited about. I know you're producing a new artist, and you were kind of pumped up about that last week when we spoke.
Yeah, I'm actually Favorite Entertainment LLC. I mentor young artists, young musicians. They don't have to be guitar players. I do basically what Bumps did for me in the digital age, because you can do it via these media forms, social media and video calls through Facebook and stuff. I produce a few artists, Presley and Taylor. I work with them in a managerial mentorship.
What's her name? Presley and Taylor?
Presley and Taylor.
That's mm-hmm. that's the name of the group, or was it a couple of artists, or?
It's two sisters, okay. And they're right now. We don't have a label deal yet. We're kind of holding back. We've got a lot of interest. The labels are. I've taken meetings with several labels, several managers, and several publicists. I'm kind of steering them to the right place to get them to the next level. And then I got another artist in the pipeline named Lindy. L-I-N-D-E, LaChance. And she's in the pipeline right now, got a project completed. We're branding her, trademarking her logos. I'm mentoring her stage presence and crafting her show. And that's what I do. Sometimes I play in the band. Sometimes I don't. You've had Saul Philcox Littlefield on your podcast. I've hired him to be in a couple of videos, you know, to do stuff. And I love Saul. By the way, shout out to everybody out there. Go to his website, look at the gear that was taken from him.
Oh, yeah.
And let's help him find his stuff. All right. So that being said, I used him on a video for Presley and Taylor called Swinging Doors and This Phone. He's a great guitar player. So, you know, I may throw him into the mix on being guitar player in the band, because as you know, Craig, my bio states, jazz is my passion. And when I say jazz, I'm not talking about old school Wes Montgomery, Herb Ellis. I love that, and I do it pretty good. But my jazz is a combination of that mixed with Brent Mason and Eric Johnson and just wacky, beautiful-sounding stuff. That's what I'm working on. And my wife is a singer who is mentioned in the bio as well, Heidi. And she's a monster singer. I'm going to send you a Christmas track. Yeah, we just finished. I've got it cut to stylus. It's not a real drummer, but I'm going to send it to a couple of drummers I know up here to put drums on. But the arrangement and all the other parts are done. Her vocal, dude, she's a badass. So that's my pet project. The other stuff, like I said, I'm producing, mentoring, teaching, life lessons. You know, just not even so much positive as not negative. You don't have to be positive about everything all the fucking time, but don't ever be negative.
Yeah.
Don't ever be negative. Don't. Because that is such a horrible attribute. You know, it's such a repellent.
It is a repellent, man. It's a terrible repellent. It really is, man. And believe me, I know that is for sure. Okay, yeah. So let's talk a little bit about tuition.
Yeah.
Because we all pay it in our careers. And I was wondering maybe if you could think of one or two things that you did that were mistakes and the lessons that you learned from making them.
Under prep on an audition for an artist cost me a job with that artist. If I'd have prepped for it, I would have gotten it with no questions asked.
What made you under prep? Because you got a good work ethic. Just cockiness at the time, or you had other things going on? Yeah.
You got it.
Yeah.
Just thinking I could wing it. Mm. When at that age, I was probably 22, 23 years old. Already played with all these people I've told you about, except for Engelbert. That was later in the 90s, but you know, done a bunch of stuff and just was like, I'm kicking around with Tommy Two Tone right now in Nashville playing Exit Inn. You know, I'm in his band. I'm rocking out with Ginny and all this stuff. And I'll go audition for that, but they're just going to hire me because I'm cool. Bullshit.
Yeah. You got caught. No, but it's a lesson though, man. But I bet you didn't make that mistake a second time.
I sure didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. I sure didn't. I was like, oh, God. The next audition I went to after that one was for Patti Loveless. And her husband was Emery Gordy Jr. And he was the MD auditioning everybody. And I auditioned against like Tom Bukovac, Bob Britt, Tom Britt, just a bunch of heavyweight players. And I was the young guy that just came in and scalded all of them, you know, because I literally thought Blame It On Your Cheating Heart was one guitar pass. In all actuality, Reggie Young and another guitar player twinning. So I learned it verbatim, like the record. I learned the twin solo. You can go back and listen to that and do it. But I just learned the thing just as it is. And that blew Remy away. He hired me on the spot. He said, we have had no one come in here and play that like that. Wow. You're the first done it. And that got me the job. I over prepped.
Yeah.
And honestly, I do, when I mentor young guitar players, I teach them how to get those gigs, because I do have a formula that's gotten me all the gigs I've ever auditioned for. So from that one fleeting moment where I got my ass handed to me because I was cocky, after that, I never got declined on an audition. I always got the job.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, that's the only way you learn from the mistakes, unfortunately. And for all of us, it's no different. You don't learn by being successful, you know.
That's right.
The flip side of that, is there maybe one or two things that you did which at the time were kind of out of your comfort zone, but in looking back, they turned into be big breakthroughs?
Yeah. As a guitar player MD for Pam Tillis in the 90s, as a young man still partying a little bit, I did a dozen or so symphony dates, and I was the MD. So guess who had to deal with the conductor? Guess who had to deal with the 82 piece symphonies? Well, I did. And I had let my theory skills lapse a little bit. So I really honed back into the theory end of being able to read the different instruments, read the conductor's book, the master of all the music that was scored out. And that was, you want to talk about being, it's like the old joke. You want to get a guitar player to turn down, put a chart in front of him, right? That's the old
That's a
joke.
Good one.
And I was run of it for about, you know, a millisecond there. I came together fairly quick, but dude, that took me to another place of respect especially with MDs and piano players and jazz cats and stuff like that. Being fairly literate, you know, really helps that.
That's great.
So that's another, we're covering all the stuff I talk to young guys about. And I hope young guitar players listen to your podcast, and I hope they take some of the stuff that everybody's telling them to heart, because if they do and they're talented, they'll go somewhere. If they don't, then they're going to be in their basement working in corporate world, wishing they had practiced a little more, you know?
Yeah, I hear you, man. No, those are great lessons. Let's talk gear for a few minutes.
Yeah, I like that.
what's your go-to guitar now, and maybe what other two guitars would round up your top three?
Well, a guy named John Scott down in Spring Hill builds Bluesman vintage guitars, and I accidentally got one from Tom Bukovac when he had the store Second Gear. He had it hanging on the wall. It weighed 7 pounds, seven and a quarter. It was a Les Paul gold top. I picked it up, played it, and bought it. Well, it needed a little work on it, so I took it to Joe Glazer.
Mm-hmm.
Glazer fixed it all up for me. In the interim, I called Bluesman and said, man, I really love this gold top. Do you guys do Tellys, Strats, and all that other stuff? And John said, well, absolutely. So after I got my gold top back from Glazer, I took it down to Spring Hill and met with John, and he let me pick out some stuff, and he put a telly together for me, a black telly that weighs 5 pounds and a third ounces.
Wow. That's pretty,
right?
That's pretty freaking, really? That's like the MacBook Air of guitars, man.
Absolutely. It sounds like $1 million. So needless to say, I was like, holy shit, I'm loving these guitars. Now in the interim, Ben DeBlanc, Ben over at Fender, he's French.
Okay, wait a minute. So this guitar that weighs 5 pounds, is it 5 pounds because it's a certain kind of wood, or is it like you know how
chambered?
It's chambered. That's what I was going to say. Like, yes. Gibson chambers are Les Pauls. Okay, so and you still get good sustain out of it, I'm imagining.
Oh my God, it's amazing! It's so amazing. I mean, everybody that hears it just loves it.
It's amazing.
And then when I hand it to them, they're like, "Oh my God!"
It's amazing, you know, how many good. And I'm sorry, I apologize for cutting you off.
It's all right.
It's amazing how many good builders there are in within Nashville. Like, Nashville sustains so many other businesses related to the core business of the music industry. You know, it's just amazing. Because it's like the fourth or fifth local builder I've heard about.
Yeah, yeah. You probably heard of Kelton Suede. And
yes, I've heard of Kelton.
Yep. Sir Guitars and all that stuff. I don't know where Sir's made, but
he's in California.
Okay, that he's makes sense. Big Sir.
Yeah. It's John Sir, Suhr. But he used to be in New York City with this guy named Rudy Pensa, and then they went off and did their own thing. He made like guitars for. I know he made Mark Knopfler's guitars, but they were down in the Village in New York City when I was a kid. Well, actually,
I wish you're from the city, right?
Yes, sir. You can't. Yeah, hear my southern accent.
So, I played the bottom. What is it? The Bottom Line, or
Bottom Line. Yeah, Bottom Line. Yeah. Bitter End were there. Yeah, Bottom Line is pretty sure it's closed now.
Yeah,
or maybe I the heard Bitter that. End. Maybe the Bitter End is closed. I think the Bottom Line is closed. A lot of those clubs are gone,
which sucks. I actually played with Little Feat there for a live thing for Sony, just jamming. I wasn't in the band or anything, but I was there. They Fred Tackett and you know those guys. Before, oh my God, God dang.
When was this?
The drummer, Richie Hayward, before he passed away. This was back in the late 90s.
Wow. Yeah, that whole area is really cool to hang out. That area of the city in general.
So anyway, the Bluesman Vintage guitars are my go-to guitars for sessions, like recording just all the stuff I'm doing with sessions. I'll use those and my Red Tele, my 62 Telecaster. I'm a Strat guy normally, and I've got an older Strat, but I'm using the Bluesman Vintage Strat, the Bluesman Vintage Tele, the Bluesman Vintage Les Paul, my Red Telecaster, and my Gibson L5. Those are my go-to guitars.
Wow. Does that Bluesman Vintage, do they wind their own pickups too, or they have, like, whose pickups are they putting in there?
I think they make their own, but they used parts that were sourced from a supplier that has vintage magnets and wire from Leo Fender from the late 50s, early 60s. And I'll get you the information. I'll send it to you in an email of the exact name of the company that sources it out. But they have a contract with them that they get their parts and they wind them. The pickups on that Gold Top, dude, they're so low output, but they're so beautiful sounding. It's a cross between a humbucker and a single coil, the best I've ever heard. Low noise, super cool bite, but it doesn't have that trebly tear your head off telly thing, and it doesn't have that muddy woof sound of the PAFs. It's unbelievable, dude. I'll have that guitar with me when I come to Florida.
Yeah, man. How far is Spring Hill from Nashville?
About 30 minutes from my house. So when you're here,
maybe I'll
go down there.
Yeah, maybe we can take a look out there.
Yeah, I'd love to take you down there.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool. Okay, so and you had a 62 Red Tele. Is that a Fender Tele?
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. Any cool or interesting stories behind how you acquired any of your guitars?
My L5. Dude, because there ain't no way this homeboy touring with a country artist could spend $16,000 on a guitar. So the story about getting the L5 is because I got it for free. They gave it to me.
Who?
Gibson.
Wow.
Yeah, they don't give jack shit to nobody.
Yeah. So what's the deal with that? This is a good story.
It is a good story. I'll try to make it quick on it. I was playing for Pam Tillis in 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007. I was her MD during that period. Well, we were doing a retro thing, and we were doing the Opry live television show on a Saturday night with the Time Jumpers. So I was going to be playing with the Time Jumpers with Pam. So Pam and Matt, who are married, Matt Spiker, who's Buddy Spiker's son, me and Matt started talking. I was like, man, it'd be cool. We got a Gibson deal. It'd be great if I could get like an L5 to borrow for that show, you know, and come out there and play those old retro songs with a real L5, you know.
And that's basically, and is that like a hollow body?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I've got it.
Yeah, man. Let's check it out.
Beautiful. It's a beautiful hollow body, as a matter of fact.
All right. So let's check it out. Wow. There you go. It? Yeah, man. It looks great. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's the Lee Ritenour signature model, too, which is even cooler because I love Lee. I just love him to death. So anyway, I go down to Gibson. Alex Torres, who was a drummer for Tracy Lawrence back in the 90s, early 90s, happens to be the A&R guy for Gibson. I did not know this. So I go in, and there's Alex, and Matt's with me, and him and Matt start talking, and I look at Alex, and we've hugged and said, hey, yay, great, it's great to see you. I start walking around looking at guitars. I picked up that L5, and I holler across the room and said, hey, Alex, what about this one? He said, oh, yeah, play it. It's awesome. So he lets me play it, and I'm in the showroom, and I'm like, is there any way you'd let me like take this with me and use on that television show with the Time Jumpers and all that stuff? And he's like, well, yeah, sure. I'll let you, you're a Gibson artist, with a Gibson artist, and we consider you an artist. So he lets me take it, and I didn't have to sign anything. I didn't have to put a serial number down. Didn't have to do anything. I didn't know it at the time that it was going to be mine. I called him and I said, hey dude, there's no strap peg. I'd have had to wear it old school style around the headstock and around the back. Mm. And I wasn't about to do that goofy looking shit. So
that is really, really goofy looking, actually. Yeah.
It is. So you're like a Howdy Doody up there.
Yeah.
Roy Rogers.
Right. That's exactly right.
So I called him. I said, man, this thing doesn't have a strap peg on the front. Can I like drill a hole and put a strap peg on that thing? He said, sure. So I drilled a hole on it, put the strap peg on it, went and played the Opry. I was on TV, crushed it. It was awesome. And about 2 weeks later, I called him and says, hey, man, I want to bring this guitar back. He said, what guitar? I said, you know. He says, what guitar? I said, really? He said, what guitar? I said, I love you, man. And ever since then, I definitely credit him for – that's one of the finest instruments I've ever laid my hands on. I mean, honestly, it's just unbelievable. So that's that story.
Does he still work for Gibson?
Oh, hell no.
I was going to say, they'll be sending him a bill when they hear this. if he's still there, they're going to dock his wages like child support or something.
No. They don't have a serial number. They don't know which guitar it is.
Yeah, that's right. Wow. Good for you, man. That is a cool story. Beautiful guitar.
Beautiful guitar. I could never replace – it literally used on the used market, they're like 10 grand.
Yeah. I'm looking at them right now. Yeah. That's what they are on Reverb. Yeah, man. What, who are your biggest influences? The guys who influence you guitar wise?
Well, you ever heard of Leon Rhodes?
No.
Okay. Leon is probably one of my guitar influences, and you could YouTube him. You listen to him. You'll see why. But he helped me bridge the gap between jazz and country. So I took a lot from his style and married it kind of with my bastardized Brent Mason chicken picking, claw kind of approach that I had. And by the way, Leon did give me my first guitar at the Opry backstage. It was a Les Paul Custom.
Wow, that's not a bad guitar to get as a starting guitar.
No, it wasn't. Grandmother had an old ES-125 double pickup that I actually really started. That was the first thing I ever played electric.
You still have that?
No, unfortunately, no.
Yeah.
I don't have the Les Paul either, which really sucks. Anybody out there got probably a early 70s or late 60s Black Beauty with a speed, one of those tunomatic bridges on it, that could be mine. But anyway, that Leon, and then obviously Ritenour and Pat Metheny and Eric Johnson. Eric Johnson is probably my biggest influence as far as my tones and how I approached phrasing lines, at least pentatonic lines. Chromatic lines are a different animal altogether. Alan Holdsworth was great using chromatics. So I have a lot of different people I listen to for different reasons. Matheny's compositions, I have all his songbooks, all his guitar books, his etudes and all that stuff. They're ridiculous. His composition is by far some of the best compositions in the world. I think that's my opinion.
Sure.
That's what I listen to.
I saw you had like a Bogner in there. I think, is that what you're playing out of now? What kind of amps usually play out of?
Actually, I play a Buddha.
Interesting. I don't usually hear it. Man, that's the first time I've heard that.
Yeah. David Barnett at Peavey and Trace Elliott and Buddha has taken such good care of me. I've got the 40-watt head. I've got an 18-watt combo, a 212 cabinet, and he's about to give me a 40-watt combo and like a 15-watt or 20-watt head. So, I mean, those things sound so good. If you just dial it in and set your, you know, tone on some of your pedals and just tweak it, sounds as good as any amp I've ever played through.
Yeah. You know, Leslie West used to play a Buddha, and he would, I know he was one of their reps, and that's the only, I really haven't seen a lot of people playing Buddhas. I know Leslie sounded great over them, obviously.
Yeah. Leslie was badass. I mean, I do have a plethora of vintage Fender amps. I've got a 65 Vibralux original, 65 Pro Reverb, Deluxe Reverb, 67 Twin. So, I mean, I've got a bunch of that stuff. I got a 71 Super Lead Marshall head. I've got a Thunder Funk head that Dave Funk built for me back in the late 80s. It's like Ken Fisher from Trainwreck, I think that's his name, Ken, that did that, and Howard Dumble and Dave Funk were all buddies. So, I mean, it's an amazing sounding rig. I got a lot of good amps. But the ones I use, when I'm recording today, when I get done, I go in and start bouncing and playing. I'll play through that Buddha, that 212 cabinet, and believe it or not, an 11 rack.
What is that?
That's that Pro Tools guitar rack, two space rack that kind of emulates the guitar. So I run it direct for a right left thing. I run my Buddha here.
Right.
This thing. I'm plugged into it. I love my Bogner, my Shiva. I love it. It's killer sounding, but it's too loud for the house.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a 30 watt. Sorry, I was wrong. This is 30 watts.
Even 30 watts for, because I have like a 38 watt Maz, you know, senior. Yeah. That's too loud, man. Yeah. I need to get like an 18 or a 15 or a 10 even, you know, for
dude,
just.
Dude, I'm telling you. You try that 18 watt combo.
The Buddha?
Yeah, it's pretty darn special. Especially for like if you're playing humbuckers or not even humbuckers, but like those let's say P90s or single coil, they fatten it up nice.
Hmm.
Yeah, like I'll play a real humbucker through my Fenders because they have that high peak sound that makes your ears bleed. But
the old Fenders,
yeah,
the old Fender amps are really just great amps. I had a new Fender and I wasn't too thrilled with it, but I know most of the artists I speak to, guys like you, they tend to have vintage Fenders. Off the cuff, what's your top three albums? First three that come to mind.
First three, Larry Carlson Live in Japan, Pat Metheny 80-81, and Al Demiola Midnight Sun.
Dude, your memory is pretty good, man. You either recovered from all your partying or you just haven't done it in so long. Your brain cells are pretty clicking. You're really good with names and boom, boom, boom. That's impressive, actually.
Thank God.
Something's working, something's right?
Ticking. Oh, shit.
All right, man. Let's get under the hood. Best childhood memory.
Childhood memory, going to Johnny Cash's house in Jamaica when I was 11.
Wow.
One of them.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, he had that house.
Kind of cool.
Yeah, he had a house down in Jamaica in Montego Bay, right outside there. And Harry Yates and Joanne Cash Yates, and my mom and my stepdad and all the kids, we all went down there for like 3 weeks.
Wow.
And it was back in that day, you know, it was in the 70s, like 76 maybe, bicentennial year. And son, it was you could hear like drums and shit in the jungle up on the hill where he lived. I mean, it was I still remember like seeing crabs crawling into the swimming pool. I fell out of a tree. I remember that we were all playing and I climbed a tree and fell out of it and knocked myself out. Got sunburnt real bad. Yeah, it was fun stuff. That pops into my head. I did go on two Holy Land trips too when I was like 7 and 14, where we went to Egypt, Israel, Greece, the Sinai Peninsula, Petra, England, and Ireland, and France.
Man, you've traveled a lot at a young age, even. And that was all because of your folks and your grandparents being in this business and making moves and stuff like that.
Yeah, it was all about the missionary stuff and, you know, Holy Land tour kind of thing. Yeah.
Interesting. Tell me something about yourself people would either be surprised to hear or would find a little odd. You're trying to go through the list of odd things, which is the least odd?
OCD a little bit, you know, and I live in a small house. I live in a small house right in the middle of Nashville. The skyline's like right back over there. And me and my wife bought this house a long time ago. And I'm OCD, but I have four kids grown. I mean, a lot of people, I keep my family separate from my persona, I guess you could say. I've done real good at keeping the two separate, family and business.
Are your kids, any of your kids involved in the music industry?
My son wants to do EDM. So he's going to move. They're all in Florida, believe it or not. All my kids, daughter's in, my youngest set. I got two boys, two girls. My youngest son and daughter live in the Orlando area. Mm-hmm. And, their mother works in the hearing, aid business, medical field down there. And on the other, in Daytona, you know where Palm Coast is?
Yeah,
Flagler?
Sure, yeah, sure do. That's on the East Coast there.
Yeah, my oldest daughter is a deputy sheriff for Flagler County.
That's badass, man.
Yeah, and my oldest son is kind of holding the fort down for the grandparents. My youngest son is thinking about moving up here to pursue the EDM mix mashup thing, and I'm going to help him out by putting him in SEE or something like that to get him grounded in the technology.
Put him in what?
SAE?
What is that?
School. It's a like an audio, it's like Full Sail. It's an audio engineering, video engineering, video editing. It's a trade school.
Okay. For music. For that, for EDM. So, okay. I get you. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Most important person in your life?
My wife.
Yeah. And how long have you been, you've been with your wife? 20 years?
Almost 20 years. Yeah.
That's cool, man. Congratulations.
I got all those other things out of my way early. I had kids early. I had two ex-wives early. So she's been the majority part of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had my kids early too. How old's your oldest?
My oldest one is 29.
Okay. Yeah. So you're a little ahead of me. My oldest is 27 and then my next is 25 and then 17.
That's about right here. Yeah. 25. 22 and 19 are about to be 20.
Yeah. That's, so it's pretty close. And I have two grandbabies. I got one, she's 3 years old. So
awesome.
Yeah. It's cool. It's good because, like, you know, you don't have the responsibility with them. It's like very liberating.
It is.
I mean, I don't know how you felt, but like raising kids is like, I just thought it was a ton of work, man. The responsibility is a lot. It's like 24/7, man. And you know, it's like we're on the 10-yard line, man. My daughter's almost 18, and so we're lucky. We made it. We survived. Most important thing your dad taught you?
most important thing my dad taught me was pay your taxes. No. really? His example of what drugs and alcohol and smoking for your life, he taught me what not to do.
I hear that, man. I totally get that. Yeah, I had a similar thing, not for drugs and alcohol, but that in a way, that's a valuable learning what not to do. It's not as good as learning what to do, but it is a valuable lesson. It's definitely not as good as learning what to do, because then you're like, you still don't know what to do. You know what not to do, but then you got to fucking find your way of what to do. And that's not easy. It wasn't for me anyway, but what not to do is a good lesson. How about your mom? Most important thing she taught you?
To love everyone, regardless.
What's your non-musical superpower?
Calming.
Calming what, other people?
Calming anybody. Yep. I can calm a situation.
That's cool. So are you like much more chilled out now than you were 15, 20 years ago? Or are you always, because you seem pretty mellow.
I'm way chill. I've always had the philosophies of the loving everyone, treat everyone great, no matter who. Just now I've gotten better at actually doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yes, I'm a lot more chill. I don't, party and raise hell like I used to.
Yeah. Best thing that's ever happened to you?
Picking up the guitar.
Yeah, that's a good one, man. I like that. Any hobby? Do you have any hobbies or interests outside of music?
Yeah, I love to skateboard.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I used to skate a lot when I was younger, so I just kind of picked it back up a couple years ago. I was just like, well, I'm 50. Let's buy some skateboards.
Yeah, man, that's you wear the things to protect your wrists or something like that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I look like Matt Damon in that bomb season.
Man, you have to, because I remember we used to go rollerblading, and this is like when I first met my wife 25 years ago, and I'd wear those things. I would never even think about leaving the house without them now at 54. Trust me, man.
Right?
Hell no. I'm not, because you get an injury now, it's like months to recover, man. When you're 25, it's like, a month, or 54, not so much, man. Favorite place you've traveled, man? You've been all over. Really have.
The Great Barrier Reef in Australia.
What do you like about that?
The Great Barrier Reef, the fish, the people in Australia. That's my favorite place other than the States, period.
Australia. You like the people there and the vibe?
I do.
You coming from that religious background, this would be interesting. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
You can come in.
Yeah, nothing. Yeah. you'd be like,
what's for dinner?
Yeah.
Have you met my son, Jesus? He looks like he's in a rock band in a millennial name. Yeah.
Darren, toughest decision you ever had to make, or hardest thing you ever had to do?
Toughest decision, I'm not so sure. Hardest thing was quitting smoking, man.
Yeah, that is tough.
That was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. And I had to do it. I know doctor told me I had to. I just knew if I wanted to live to see my grandbabies and see my kids and be a provider for everyone in my family for a length of time, at a peak time in my life when I could, I had to give that stuff up. I had to give it all up.
That's cool.
I gave it. I quit drinking in 2003. Quit smoking about 3 years ago. So I mean, I've over the years I've kind of like knocked stuff off that have been like detrimental.
Good, that's good, man. Yeah, quitting smoking is hard. I used to smoke years ago. It took about 30 days to get out of my, until you're not like Jones.
Yes.
But you know what, man? You know what was more, for me anyway, more difficult than quitting smoking was to stop and drink and Diet Coke. I swear that I used to drink three cans of diet soda a day, Coke, Pepsi, whatever. Yep. Man, when I quit that, I had more withdrawals than when I quit nicotine.
Really?
Yes, sir. Yeah, it was shocking. I couldn't believe it. And maybe it was just me, but yeah, headaches and cigarettes was more like, you know, after a couple of weeks, the physical is gone. You still have the habit that you want a cigarette at certain particular times because that's what you do.
Yeah.
But the diet soda, man, I was shocked when I quit that, man. It was like, holy crap. Yeah, man, it was like.
Is it caffeine or is it non-caffeinated?
I don't know, but whatever the hell it is cannot be good that it's making me Jones for a month, you know.
putting my phone on the charger.
Yeah, man. One last question. And I really appreciate you and your openness. What's your definition of happiness? Understanding that that obviously changes over time.
Happiness is a choice. And the definition of happiness is health and love.
Good deal, man.
Hey, has nothing to do with money.
What's that?
Money has nothing to do with money. Money helps you pay your bills and keep eating groceries and, you know, eating shrimp tacos or whatever it is you want to make. But if you don't have your health, one, first.
Yeah, for sure, man.
Someone to share your life with, love, or the love of something or somebody that's, you know, then that's happiness to me.
Yeah.
I've got it all.
I agree with you, man. Hey, what's that?
I got that guy, too.
Oh, there you go, man. I got one of those. Listen, what do you want to promote? Where can people find, I mean, let's talk about your artists. Darren's got these two new artists, Presley and Taylor. Is it Presley?
Yeah, just like Elvis Presley and James Taylor. And that's one act. Right. That's a sister duo. Lindy, Linde, LaChance, LaChance. Love those two. You can go to their websites and check them out. My website is under construction for Favorite Entertainment LLC /consulting and mentoring. And I have a band called the Baller Boys that I use for showcases they are the ballers. I mean, we're ballers. We throw down when we play, you know, for people. And, the band, has Ben Guidry on bass, Tom Hurst on drums, Jimmy Herman on fiddle, Michael Hughes on keys, myself on guitar, and we'll have a steel player every once in a while, which would be Smith Curry. And that's all going to be on my website. All the artists, all that stuff, and it's going to be at Favorite Entertainment LLC or DarrenFavorite.com.
Awesome. Man, I can't thank you enough for your time. You're a really good guy, man. I appreciate you being so open and direct. Thank you, man.
Hey, Greg, you're awesome, buddy.
Thank you.
Thank you for making me feel important. <'Cause you did.
laughs> Good, man. I'm glad you are. So hang on. Don't. I'm going to say goodbye, but you stick around. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate that. And I hope you enjoyed this interview with Darren Favorite as much as I did. Thanks again to Darren Favorite for spending time with us. I really appreciate it. And directly from the throne at that. I can't tell you what that means. That's a little inside joke. Anyway, go to everyonelovesguitar.com and sign up to get notified about future episodes along with some cool stuff for guitar players. Now be nice, go play a guitar and have fun. Till next time, peace and love. I am out, y'all. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.